Yo, what's up, guys? JB here, and we're here for another exciting round of our roundtable discussions. I didn't mean to say round twice there, but I did, and I'm not going to take it back. Today is Saturday, the 12th of June, and I'm joined on this edition of our roundtable discussions by no other than Mr. Jesse Feinberg.
Woo!
What's up?
What's up? What's up?
We are going to get to as many questions as possible tonight. Jesse, if you guys are not aware, he released his first effect on Theory 11 a few weeks ago. It is entitled Spello Change. It's something he's been working on for several years now. It's new to Theory 11, however, and we've got a lot of other exciting stuff coming from Jesse, so we thought it'd be both relevant and interesting to have him on the podcast tonight. So Jesse, we only have a limited time here, so I'm going to try to get to as many questions as we can. These are going to be in sequential order, so we're going to go through the thread that you guys posted, the questions you guys asked, and get to as many as we can. The first question I'm seeing here, which I thought was a good question to start things out, is by MagicMan123-2. His question is a good kind of beginning question for the podcast, and that's what got you started in magic. Everyone has like their hook or their influence that initially sparked that passion. What was that for you? What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so thank you, Magic Man.
No problem. Oh, you're talking to him. Okay.
Basically, like I think I went to go see a magic show when I was like four, maybe 5 years old. And it was a local show in Massachusetts called Le Grand David, and they did like stage magic and all this cool stuff, and I was just really into it. And we went to go see one more magic show later that year. I think it was in New York, like Siegfried and Roy in New York, like back in the day. And we went to Tannen's after that, and then back in Boston there was also a magic shop, Hank Lee's, and so my dad took me there and we started buying silly little tricks, and then videos, then books, then the cool tricks, and you know, just went from there. So
it's cool. Talking about the creation process, there's a question here by Cardmaster211. He's saying, what was the first trick that you designed and created yourself? And how did that, you know, how does that compare to the type of magic you're creating today? So how did you get started creating magic? You just talked about what got you started being interested in magic, but what was the first thing you created, and how did that process start?
Cool. Yeah, it's very vivid memory. It's like I was playing around with a Bic pen, and I was maybe, I don't know, 15 years old, and I had these like fake cigarette things that were like the shell of a cigarette, and I realized that like these cigarettes were like the same size as a pen, and that's where I came up with the trick Cigapen. So I had this idea for maybe six years, and then one day I decided, hey, maybe this is something I could like try selling to the community, you know, years later, and that was my first trick, Cigapen. Yeah.
Talking about style, so we talked about, you know, your initial passion for magic, your creation process. There's a question here by Luis Vega. He's in Mexico, I believe. And he's talking about style. His question is, how did you develop a unique style? And for those that are unfamiliar with Jesse and kind of, you know, the style he puts out, go check out his website, and you'll see this kind of offbeat, I don't even know what you describe it as.
I don't know either. Yeah.
Techno, crazy, colorful, very vibrant, unique style. Just as Daniel Madison, for example. Here's a great example. Daniel Madison, his style is very mysterious and black and white. Jesse is the linear opposite. So this is like, if you dial down the saturation of a Daniel Madison video to 100% desaturated, Jesse's would be dialed all the way up. And but how did you develop a style and this kind of vibe that all the videos, at least I've seen of you, exude?
Well, you know, I started making like silly videos where I just really wanted to catch like as much visual shots of the tricks, and then slowly that kind of turned into maybe putting in like a funny clip like here and there, but mainly just trying to make it look cool and fun, you know, mostly fun. I mean, to me, magic is a real fun thing. It's like something that you can just make people like laugh and smile or, you know, anything like that. But, so unique style, I guess, you know, just having fun with it and just using my own humor to, you know, put this visual together for you guys. You know?
So basically you're saying that you just kind of took your personality and infused that into what you were doing. And that's what resulted in this, I was going to say, you know, crazy, wacky style, but your style is the nicer way to say it.
Yeah.
I think that's how everyone does it. I mean, that's how, you know, Madison is a kind of a quiet, reserved guy that's mysterious. And so his videos reflect that. Yours are more vibrant and lively, which is, you know, your style and your personality. So I think that for people listening to this, you kind of take whatever your personality is in your day-to-day life. And a lot of magicians or a lot of performers in general, all you do is amplify that. So it's an exaggerated version of yourself is a phrase that I hear a lot.
Yeah.
There's a question here by Jeff Price. He's post number 7. He is asking, well, he's recognized that a lot of your creations use ordinary objects, pens, cigarettes, ordinary type objects, not necessarily cards and coins and the normal things that people associate magic with. Although, you know, you've done magic obviously with cards, and we're working on some stuff with you with cards right now. But his question is, do you think magic with ordinary objects is more powerful than magic with cards or coins or magic type objects?
I don't think it's more powerful. I think it's maybe equal. For me, like, ordinary objects is kind of inspiring because, I'll look at like a pen and I'll wonder, you know, what can I fit inside the pen? What fits on the outside of the pen? What can I do with the pen cap? So I kind of like break it down into pieces. Whereas like I'm always carrying a deck of cards on me, and I don't do much coin magic, but I'd really like to, you know, learn more coin magic. I think they're equal. I'm just inspired by ordinary objects that are just kind of sitting around on the desk, you know?
Right. But do you think there's some value? Like, I think this is what Jeff's getting at. Do you think there's some value to a spectator? Spectators don't see playing cards every day. So you walk up to someone and say, hey, pick a card. Like, okay, this is a different experience for them. But if you say, you know, can I borrow that water bottle? Or, you know, I've got a pen and it's on the table already. There's a comfort level with the objects, and it doesn't seem like you're doing something weird or like, oh, look, I've got this Mexican centavo. what? So, you know,
I'm not it's like SpongeBob's. It's like, what the hell is that, you know? But I love SpongeBob's. They're cool, but it's just that you won't catch me carrying SpongeBob's in my pocket because I don't know, it's just not something that I would have in my pocket. So yeah, for me, like doing a trick with a pen, something real quick and visual, something that, you know, it's like I almost just picked this pen up off of your desk, did a trick and put it back. To me, that is a little bit more powerful. It's a little bit more powerful maybe with ordinary objects.
It adds something.
There's something like, hey, he just picked that up off of my desk and then, you know, did something crazy. But, you know, I get people asking like, oh, are those trick cards, you know? Oh, no, absolutely not. You know, check them out. Here, shuffle them up. So then, you know, there's really no.
I think the same thing applies to all types of magic. For example, stage magic. You see some stage magicians still use these props that are straight out of, like, the 80s that look like they're from the set of Saved by the Bell, where they've got, like, bright colors and just kind of – they don't look like normal. They look like these weird-shaped objects, whereas if you look at a modern show, if you look at Copperfield show – the props are as minimal as possible. I mean, Copperfield's props are, you know, like a plate or a sheet, or there's almost nothing there, you know, so he's not hiding behind the props. The props aren't speaking louder than he is. I think the same thing that Jeff was getting at could be applied to a lot of other types of magic, or at least be considered. There's a question here. Uncle Mings, his post number is 8. This is a offbeat question, but I like asking it because we tend to ask this of everyone we do a podcast with. He's saying, what profession would you have gotten into if magic didn't work out for you? Or I like to expand this, though. What other fields are you interested in besides magic? So I answer either of those questions. What else interests you? What are your other passions?
Yeah, I've got so many. When I got out of high school, I was like, what am I doing? What do? I want to do everything that I want. Like, I want to make music. I play guitar, bass, and I love making like hip hop beats, and, you know, I have like drum machine and keyboard and all that stuff. I love that. You know, I wish I could be making millions of dollars working in a music studio, you know? I also wish that I could be like a chef. You know, I almost went to school to be a chef, you know, because I love cooking and I love food and it's great. But magic was just like one of those things where it was always like a passion and a hobby and like a serious hobby, you know, and it just kept coming back, you know, and I could never get away from it. I never wanted to get away from it, but I could never just put it down and have it just, you know, and kind of forget about it. I always loved it. So it just kind of, I fell into place, you know.
There's a question here by Chris W. It's on page 2, post number 14. After each performance, how do you analyze the good and the bad parts? How do you critique yourself after you perform something? Is there any process to that? Or how do you judge your own performances and improve?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I learn every time, you know, I do a trick for somebody, because you never know what kind of reactions you're going to get from people, and that's what makes it so exciting. So, you know, every time I perform a trick, maybe the trick goes wrong and they don't notice, and I make do something to, you know, to distract them for a second, or maybe the trick goes great, but I wish that I performed it a little bit differently or made it more funny or more serious. So, I guess, you know, I like to just perform for my friends a lot and then ask their opinion. And at this point, a lot of my friends, you know, they know what's up. They love giving me opinions and they love being fooled, and they'll tell me if I flashed, and you know, it's great.
I think that's very important, having, yeah, you know, friends in or out of the magic community that can give you that unfiltered advice. They're, you know, you want the friends that are not afraid at all to tell you sucked, and they totally saw that. And you know, yep. I love that. That's, you know, since I was younger, that's what Chris Kenner was to me, and Jason England. You know, I just pass him things all the time now, and Jason especially is the type that will not hesitate to tell me that he, you know, doesn't like something or he disagrees with something or offer his own opinion. So you have to have friends like that. If all of your friends are just like, "That's awesome, that's cool, that's awesome,"
yeah, wow, then, how did you do that?
Yeah, or you know, inside magic, just telling you that everything you show them is cool and great. No, it's not. I mean, any magician in the world or any creator is going to create some things that are better than others, and some people are going to like some things better than others. So it's good to have multiple creative opinions that you value, that, you know, speak to you and will tell you their unfiltered opinion. I think that's invaluable.
Yeah.
Question here by Gavin, post number 16. This is his first post, and I think it's a good one. He's saying, "What is one lesson you know now that you wish you'd known when you started magic?"
A lesson.
What do you know now that you wish you knew then?
Ooh. Does it have to do with magic or just anything?
He says when he started magic, so I think it would be magic, but anything related to magic I think is fair game.
Yeah, I would say, you know, practice is really important. I've been realizing, like, over the past couple of years, it's like there's so many, like, new cool tricks coming out and stuff, and I've been trying to focus more on just finishing that book that I have, or, like, you know, just practicing one card move for like the whole day and just not being distracted by anything else. So really, like, focus in on what you like and don't get too distracted by all the, you know, cool tricks and moves that, like, your friend might be trying to learn, and just focus on what you like and, you know, that sort of thing. Cause everybody's got that drawer of magic that you just never use. And, I don't know. That just might be, you know, a good thing to really, like, focus in on your favorite stuff, you know, and really practice it. And that's what I've been trying to do more, just real, you know, real deal practice, like, be really serious about it.
Yeah, from my perspective, I wish the same thing, that, you know, when I was younger and just starting out, I had I was in stage magic. So not only did I have I didn't have a drawer full of stuff I didn't use anymore. I had, like, a warehouse full of stuff I didn't use anymore.
Yeah.
So it was a whole nother league of worthless junk that I wasn't touching. But I think what you said has a lot of value in honing on what your style is, who you are. But then the other thing is just, like, have fun with it. I wish, like, I wasn't focused as much when I was younger on just learning every single trick I did. And this was before there was magic preview videos online. So I would read something in, like, Hank Lee's catalog, and I'd be like,
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Make doves appear. Hell yeah, I want to do that.
And so then, like, true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and I would just buy things because they sounded cool in print. At least now everyone has the benefit of seeing a video, or at least on our site they do. But I didn't then. So have fun with it. Like, you know, learn a few things and go out there, perform them for your friends, meet some people, develop your style. You don't need to learn 500 tricks to have right. a style. You can learn 5 tricks that are your go-to thing. I think any working professional I know, certainly everyone that I associate with in Las Vegas and New York and LA, has like 5 go-to tricks. And if I tell them, let's go perform for those people over there, I can pretty much tell you what tricks they're going to do. And it's probably one of 5 tricks per person. So that tells you something. These are professionals and they have a very select few amount of tricks they go to for each performance. I think you'd say the same, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, everybody's going to build that drawer of like, you know, random tricks that you're not using. But you know, if you just focus more on practicing, you'll actually whittle down that drawer of magic and bust some cool stuff out that you didn't know you had. And the stuff that you do buy, you'll hopefully just practice a little bit more and just be that much more awesome at it, you know? So,
I'm trying to find a few more questions here because we are running out of time, but I want to get to.
I do like Pokemon, by the way.
Bumblebee. That's an important note. I think we could not have finished this without that cleared up. This is a good one. This is a question that always comes up every single podcast with every creator we've ever done anything with. And it's Asa Clubs. His post number is 19. Do you brainstorm to think about an effect, or do they just come to you? So he's asking, how does your creative process work? Do you like grab pens and stuff and just like roll around with them for a day? Or are you like walking in the mall or you're in the shower and you'd be like, oh, you know what? I can make this dove appear out of this box of playing cards, whatever the trick is.
Right.
How does that process work for you, or how has it worked traditionally for you in the past?
Yeah, like, well, it's like a couple of different ways. Either I'll just sort of challenge myself, like, okay, I really want to create something new with a card box. So I'm just going to carry this deck of cards around all day, and I'm just going to kind of look at it and throw it in the air and kick it around and do whatever until maybe I'm inspired by something. Who knows? And you just never know. And then also, like, sometimes things will just kind of dawn on me, like, you know, like, maybe even something that I wasn't even playing with. And I don't know. I don't know where that comes from. But it's just sort of just like unfiltered, you know, thoughts. And then, you know, you go home and start playing around and yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. Kind of bouncing off that question, Anthony Almario, he's in the Philippines, post number 23. What's up? He says, what inspired you to create the Spello Change? So let's talk about that for a second. That's your first release on Theory 11. How did that effect come about? A lot of people are like, oh, it's the same thing that some dude on YouTube exposed. It's not. We can clear that up right now. Sure. There's a lot of advantages that Spello Change has that thing doesn't, and the method is not the same. But thank you guys for reporting it. So let's talk about the Spello Change. Tell people how that came about. How did it develop into what it is today?
Yeah, so I mean, I was playing around with a card box and the cellophane, and I sort of came up with this real basic idea where and you know, it's like the one that people are saying, oh, but there's this older version out. So basically, independently, I came up with this older version, this method, and that was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And then a few, like maybe 2-3 years ago, it just dawned on me, and I'm not going to reveal the method, but the method dawned on me, and I was like, oh man, I got to try this. And it was something totally different. And
Velcro.
Yeah, Velcro. Yeah. So I tried it out and it worked great. And I realized immediately the potential of it and all the different things you can do with this. And so the first demo I ever did, I sort of show shots of it that leave you questioning, like, how is it done? Is it this old method that I saw like some guy exposing on YouTube? Or is it this old thing that I read in like Magic Magazine a few years ago? But wait, there's that one frame where he's not doing what I thought he was doing. Hold on a second. And so that's sort of where Spello Change came from, just just playing around with some basic ideas, you know, you never know what comes.
Was there a period of refinement where like you came out with the basic concept here, you played with it? Obviously, anyone that has a Spell of Change video will see there's multiple applications that are taught in that of doing it with this, or like in the preview video, you'll see that you do it with a television set that's on the back. How did that process work? So once you created the method, the technique, how did you begin to experiment with how you were going to utilize that?
Yeah, I made a demo video of it, and I kind of filmed all the different parts. Like I had a one performance where I was showing the snow globe and like all the little dots in the snow globe, and I was at the time I was actually familiar with this trick that Jay Sankey had just come out with, and so I sent him the video, and he kind of gave me his blessing, and you know, as long as I gave him credit for the snow globe idea, which was really cool. So I, you know, I got a little feedback from him as well, and yeah, and that's when I started to realize, like, oh man, there's other cool things you can do with this. And you know, for that, like literally that whole year, I carried Spell of Change around with me and did it all the time. It's great. It's one of my favorites.
We're going to get to a few more questions here, just one or two more. Then we have to wrap this up for the evening. Question by Little Lead. His post number is 36. Who or what inspired you or influenced you to do the style of magic you do today? So who would you cite as your influences, living or dead, inside or outside of magic, to become who you are today?
Wow. Well, when I was really young, one of the first shows that I saw was David Copperfield. And then every year I'd watch his like specials, and he'd always do like close-up magic, which was what I always loved. I mean, the stage magic was cool, and I was really inspired by the shows when I left. But when I saw him on TV performing just like little tricks, like, you know, I remember like him doing a piece of coal that turned into a diamond. And then he did like a floating match thing. And then, oh man, that was a great episode. I forget which special that was, but so David Copperfield for sure. And then, you know, maybe once I started reading books and watching more videos and stuff, people like David Acker, and like Sankey, and just like these really sort of funny, because you can tell these guys are having so much fun doing what they're doing. And so that's like inspiring to me, just doing magic, like blowing people's minds and like having so much fun. That's like, what could be better than that?
Are there any particular creators in magic that you would cite as like your top, you know, three biggest influences over the years for creating?
Yeah. Well, like one of my like favorite creators ever is Masuda. He's just like amazing. He creates all these really crazy outside of the box concepts and effects. And he uses really cool materials. It's really inspiring. So definitely him, and I mean, Paul Harris, you know, for sure. You know, his Art of Astonishment books, I've had them for a really long time, and crazy inspiration from him as well. Yeah.
Anyone else off the top of your head?
I would say, I'm like looking at my books over here. Oh man, so many people. Michael Ammar, he's...
Michael, you know, correct?
Yeah, he's the man. It's been amazing, like, since I've been able to meet him, too, like, just kind of seeing just how creative he really is.
Speaking of Ammar, that kind of leads us to the last thing I want to talk about here, which is what we've got coming up next with you on Theory 11. And Ammar, correct me if I'm wrong, had a bit of a part in that, in helping you with... or at least kind of inspiring a bit of the method of this particular effect?
Yes, he definitely inspired me, said top secret effect.
Yes. So we've got something. I don't want to really spill the beans on exactly what it is. I don't think you do either. But we've started photography of it already. That's why Jesse was here in New York City a few weeks ago. And I think we'll be back probably this coming week. But it's super exciting. This is a 1,000,000,000% practical effect that you can carry around. There's nothing difficult or you got to make or anything like that. It's a super practical, ridiculously visual effect that's fooled the crap out of me when I saw it for the first time. So that's the type of effect that we look for, obviously. Something that's usable, that's fun to perform, uses normal objects that aren't too out of the box. And I think that's what this is. I'm super excited about it. So that's, I think, what we have coming up next out of the pipeline from Jesse.
Yes, I'm so excited, man. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait for you guys to see this.
Yeah, we've got a lot of things and, you know, in the works, and some card stuff, and some, this is obviously not card stuff, DVD that we're talking about. So stay tuned over the next few weeks. We'll start to tease this very soon and show you guys some information about what this effect is and what it's all about. All right, I'm going to wrap this up, but thank you, Jesse, for answering all the questions, and thank everyone out there for submitting all the questions. We got a lot of questions in tonight. I think we've got close to 100, 120 questions in tonight, or maybe a little bit more than that. We try to get to as many as we can, so thank you guys for participating in it, and thank you once again to Jesse for taking the time out tonight to answer them all.
Thank you so much, man. It was great.
Peace out.
Peace, man.